Welcome to the Unblocking Crypto Podcast. This podcast is not financial advice. It's meant for entertainment purposes only. These are just the opinions of a couple of rambling wrecks.
Welcome back to episode number 124 of Unblocking Crypto. Hal, as always, great to see you.
Good to see you, Jason. How are we doing?
Oh, man, another interesting week. I know we talked a lot about some of the stuff that Trump was doing last week and getting Californians to donate money to his campaign. Well, it sounds like there's been kind of, I don't want to say the Democrats, but there's a meeting happening in DC now that is purely crypto, and it's focused on both policymakers and the innovation leaders. Their goal is to keep Bitcoin and blockchain innovation inside the US. There's this, what they're saying, it's probably the most important blockchain meeting to date. It'll include not only officials from the Biden administration, but Mark Cuban is planning on attending as well. I think it's almost entirely in response to what Trump was doing in San Francisco. So exciting to see. We'll see what comes out of it. I don't think it's scheduled until early July, but this would be great for things to happen.
Yeah, I got wind of that too. And it was like, well, here's game theory. Like, it seems like everybody that chooses the non-Bitcoin side of the argument eventually capitulates, you know, whether it's BlackRock or the blue team or, you know, the guy down the street or whatever, it's kind of a matter of time before they realize I'm on the wrong side of things. And like Mark Cuban is interesting because, you know, he's a real public billionaire with Shark Tank and the Mavericks and all that stuff. But I don't really like him from a crypto, like a logical thinker about crypto. Like he seems to kind of be scattered. Every time I hear him talk about it, he's kind of all over the place. So he may just be going through iterations like we did years ago, where you just kind of like fumble through stuff. And everything seems like a good idea until you realize like, okay, take a breath, like slow it down, really evaluate and things like that. So anybody that's not like super heavy on Bitcoin with some Ethereum and some other, you know, a couple others, I'm kind of hesitant to get behind. So it's fine. I think that like there's the Overton window that needs to shift where talking about Bitcoin and crypto at large becomes way more acceptable for politicians. Because if Biden's doing this, like there's, you know, that's the other side of the coin from Elizabeth Warren, who is seemingly only meeting with bankers that want to slow the crypto regulation down. So I'll take it. I'm curious to see which way it goes. I feel like the blue team will be trying to figure out more of a CBDC path. But, you know, I'll pay attention to it because for all I know, we have another blue guy in the White House for 4 more years. So they need to thaw out on their like ice cold position on crypto.
Well, the interesting piece to me, Mark Cuban has become somewhat famous for coming out and saying that the reason that Biden is probably going to lose right now is because of Gary Gensler, right? And the lack of regulation that the SEC has had. So, I mean, that's kind of a big deal and a big thing to say. And it would be interesting to get him to almost push the message that the SEC needs to get away from being this, let me just enforce by all the fines, right? Instead of creating some actual rules. And even Brian Armstrong, I think they asked him about like what he thought about this. And he's like, look, all this means is that crypto has arrived, right? This is not a blue versus red. This is a bipartisan.
How do we say? Bipartisan.
Bipartisan, yes. Issue that, I mean, it needs to be taken care of, right? So both sides need to figure out a way to make this happen. And hopefully that means that this will get us closer to doing that.
No, I agree that it is a bipartisan issue. I just think that Washington, D.C. is not accustomed to bipartisan issues. I feel like every single thing becomes binary. You're either a one or a zero. And I believe that that's where they were on this. And they may just be realizing like, it's kind of like AI. You can't be anti-AI. You either need to be pro-AI without regulation or pro-AI regulation. Like you can't be anti-AI. So it's the same thing here. You can't be anti-crypto. You just need to be either it's the Wild West, let's keep it that way, or let's build comprehensive regulation to give these guys some guidelines and a path to follow. So, yeah, I mean, think about this, man. Last year, we talked about regulation, and it was like so far away from politics. Biden did that analysis. He sent whatever it was, 8 different departments to get their thoughts on crypto. And it was all negative. Like it was all ESG. We got to shut this stuff down. It's all counterfeit and money laundering and all that stuff. And then poof, here we are where it's way, that position has softened so much that by the time November rolls around, I think that it's going to be, I think we're going to feel a lot better about it.
Well, Biden vetoed SAB 121, which he said was going to be a huge thorn in his side from the crypto community, right? And then I think not too long ago, they had requested all this information from all the Bitcoin miners, which luckily they put a kind of kibosh on it because they were kind of, what you were just saying, the ESG portion of it, they're thinking they're using too much energy. Well, Trump has actually gone out and met with the Bitcoin miners here recently, too. It sounds like with the executives in the room, they had about 30% of the global mining power in that room. And yeah. I mean, there's not a ton of details that have come out of it, but it sounded like a pretty positive conversation. And what all of them said is, hey, we'd love to meet with Biden too, right? So it'd be great to see if Biden follows suit and starts meeting with the Bitcoin miners, because I mean, there's a lot of power there. I mean, if this meeting is happening to keep innovation in the U.S., then it would be great for Biden to get involved in this kind of conversation as well.
Yeah, and I mean, there's a narrative there that they can spin, because you've got the high efficiency miners that use renewable energy, like to drive that energy price down, or nuclear or whatever, so that it is kind of the like your top tier miners that have it figured out. So, well, they're providing a path for more renewable energy. And then the lower tier miners that are going to get kind of booted out because of, I mean, we're basically at the same price we were before the halving. So their revenue is cut in half right now from where it was in January, which is probably okay. But if the hash rate keeps going up, your lower tier, less efficient miners that may have a center that's got low power, but they've got old miners, low efficiency stuff, like, there's a data center. That's a great spot for a data center. Like, I don't remember hearing about any data centers building renewable power to power themselves or to position themselves in a spot that had access to renewables. So, like, even if you don't sell all the low efficiency miners and turn that site into like an AI data center, showing them, hey, dummies, if you need that much power, build your own power and use off gases or you know, less, you know, don't just plug into the grid and make the centralized infrastructure provide more power to you. And you know, I mean, there's line losses that aren't being considered, you know, when you're miles away from the power source. You know, if you data centers don't care where they are. So for me, I think the value from the miners is greater than even just balancing the grid and providing access for renewables and load following for nuclear and things like that. I think there's just teaching other industries, you know, where to build and how to build it and what's possible. I think for a few years, I mean, these AI data centers need tons of power. And so these small nuclear reactors could be an option there. And, you know, Bitcoin miners have been talking about that for a couple of years now. So like, I think it's a valuable thing. I did listen to a podcast that had, I don't know, maybe it was the Riot guy, that one of the guys that was at Mar-a-Lago meeting Trump and that miner. I think they all signed a confidentiality NDA kind of thing, so they couldn't talk about it. So there wasn't, he really couldn't give much information about it. But other than it was a good conversation. And he indicated that Trump had more than just a surface level, like, you know, he was coached up on Bitcoin. Like he's starting to kind of connect some of the dots with global monetary theory, inflation, Bitcoin, hard assets, you know, it like more than just, you know, Bitcoin is good. Vote for me. I'm the Bitcoin president. Like, you know, anybody can say those words. So anyway, that's better than nothing. I don't anticipate that either of these old guys learns a whole lot about Bitcoin. I don't think that there's enough incentive in it for them, and they're busy. But I'll take what I can get, because it, you know how Bitcoin is, man. It's just a little bit at first, and a politician learns a little bit and sees the gains, and then the next guy is like, you know what, this is going to be a real platform component for me. So I'll take it. I think it's good. At this point, I think the timing is good. I think that if the government came into this 7-8 years ago, that it could be like, Bitcoin's not big enough. It doesn't have enough. And I think the government could do something about it. And now I think that Bitcoin's big enough and the network's distributed enough that it won't be a problem.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of an interesting timing perspective too, because the IMF has just released that there is going to be a striking decline in the amount of global reserve dollars from the U.S. in both foreign central banks and governments. So, I mean, it is kind of more important now than ever to understand how to bring more back into the U.S. if there's going to be a lot less U.S. dollars being held throughout all these other organizations and governments around the world.
We'll see. The dollar's got so much momentum, man. I mean, these countries, like so many countries, it takes them so long to adjust course that, you know, I think we say it a lot, like Bitcoin feels like it's moving at light speed. Then you take a step back, like everything else is moves so slow. Like, yeah, Governments changing and adapting. I mean, China has been buying gold and decreasing their U.S. treasury holdings for years. And they still have a ton of treasuries in there. You know, I mean, it's like, it takes forever for these things to move. But I mean, like Bitcoin, you know, time is on Bitcoin's side. So you just kind of have to wait.
I mean, I don't think it's just a Bitcoin thing that it's moving to. It's just everybody's wanting to use their own currencies too, or hold other currencies now that you have all these automated market manager money, PMMs, whatever that stands for, where they can kind of move things around very quickly and not have to rely just on a single US dollar. Now the US dollar is, yeah, to your point, extremely strong right now. So will it stay that way? I guess, hopefully, time will tell. But yeah, it's going to be interesting here moving forward.
Yeah, I think it's funny, man. The FOMC meeting came through and they are just like still doing nothing. And the market's still pricing in one price cut this year. And it's like, guys, like, you've been wrong all year. You know, they were supposed to have 4 or 5 price rate cuts this year. And, you know, every time the FOMC comes out and they say, we're not doing anything, like, okay, well, then the market adapts and adjusts and does all these things. And it's like, how long are we going to keep doing this?
Speaking of being wrong, I don't know if you saw the SEC crypto enforcer is planning to leave. I think he's been at the SEC for 9 years and been focused on the crypto side for the past couple, but he has said he is very proud of what they've done over the past couple of years. He hasn't really said where he's going to, but he's going to take some time and travel with the family, and then he will announce where he's going to be after that. There was some jokes on Pumped Up Fun, which is a meme coin place, saying that he was coming over there to be the new head of trading, which he said he was not. So he denied it. Everybody else knew that it was kind of funny that they were doing that. But yeah, I mean, it's crazy how the SEC thinks they've been doing such a good job the past couple of years, and the rest of the industry is not thinking that at all. And shoot, even Coinbase came out with a report saying that due to the lack of regulation in the US, we've lost like 14% of the available talent in the last 5 years to other countries for blockchain stuff, right? So, I mean, that's, anytime it's negative, that's not good for growth and innovation.
Yeah, I feel like he just has to say that on his way out. I mean, he's a government employee. Like, hey, they're not going to do much no matter what. And then when they leave, they have to be patting themselves on the back about how much they did. I mean, it's, you know, it's like when you read somebody's resume and it's like completely fluffed up. Yeah, that's what it is. I don't think whether he genuinely believes that he's proud of their performance over the last few years, or if he's just, maybe he's just so in the weeds with the government stuff that he actually thinks they're doing a decent job instead of just floundering. And I mean, they're doing things, And sometimes those government employees think, what if they do something, it's better than nothing. And so maybe he does believe it, but it's more likely that he just had to write some comments just to, you know, pat his team on the back and stuff like that. So I don't think it'll be, I wouldn't be surprised if he moves into some like Coinbase lobbyist kind of position. That seems to be the kind of move those guys make. So we'll see.
Yeah. So I think there's been some interesting news from the Bitcoin ETFs. It's always kind of fun to talk about that because most people are almost kind of negative on it right now, where they just end their 19th days of inflows and they had like $564 million in outflows over the last 3 days, which is kind of similar. I think in the end of April, they had like 1.2 billion. So it's kind of tracking to that type of same week or 6 days ish that they did back in April. But what's crazy is if you look at like the last 30 days, there's been almost $11 billion of Bitcoin and Ethereum taken out of exchanges. So while the ETFs, there's not as much of it going in, there is still a ton of people that are saying, we're going to hold this for a while. We're not going to put it on exchanges. So it's still pretty positive, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, we're doing all the stuff that happens after the halving and before the hyperbolic price increase that usually happens. You know, I mean, honestly, this is now June, so we're talking a couple months away from that fall inflection point where we start to see the miners start to capitulate. They basically run out of Bitcoin to sell. And I'm surprised that we haven't seen some of these smaller miners just pack everything up, put the Bitcoin in their pocket and wipe their hands and be like, all right, well, we did what we wanted to do and now we're out of the market and we've got our Bitcoin. So dissolve the company and we're done here, you know, but we haven't seen that yet. But yeah, I anticipate until I'm proven wrong, the cycles continue. So we're a little ahead of the game as far as price being elevated, but for all I know, this is where we should have been. And that last cycle was so weird because of the China mining ban and the FTX and the Terra Luna and all the things that suppressed the price. Maybe this is where we should have been. And they kind of knocked the legs out from underneath the last bull run. So I think we're still in a great spot. And it's funny because it doesn't feel like we're like everybody's talking about Bitcoin and, you know, we're kind of where we are in these bull runs. But if you look at the fear and greed index, it's like over 70 on the greed side. Like it does not feel like greed right now. It just feels like chopping, boring kind of nothingness.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's also, you're seeing other countries still almost dip their toes into this, right? Australia announced that the first Bitcoin spot ETF over there on the ASX, the Australian Stock Exchange. VanEck was just able to launch that, or I guess they're about to launch it on the 20th of June. What's kind of crazy is there is a competitor over there to that stock exchange, CBOE, that already had a Bitcoin spot ETF. So it's not really the first one in Australia, but it is good that you can get it from either stock exchange now. And I mean, that's kind of exciting for other countries to have a regulated way to get Bitcoin to me inside of their retirement plans. I don't think you want to do that with all of your Bitcoin, like we've talked about, but at least it's still moving the path forward to have access for pensions and all that stuff to easily access it to.
Yeah. Well, not only that, you know, these guys that have the older guys with money and all that, like they only talk about their wins. Like they only talk about the investments that go up. And if Bitcoin starts going up and you've got more and more of these same old guys with a bunch of money that now have Bitcoin exposure instead of like the one eccentric weirdo old guy that had Bitcoin exposure 4 or 5 years ago that everybody thinks is crazy or goofy or whatever. Now you're going to have three or four of those guys in the card room or wherever, golf course, talking about their Bitcoin going up, and it's going to just draw in more people and they're going to get more and more Bitcoin exposure. So the more avenues to get Bitcoin exposure, the better. And I'm, you know, I'm a kind of a weird guy for like, as much as I'm into Bitcoin and Bitcoin exclusively, I feel like there's just a lot of people that aren't going to buy a hardware wallet, and they're not even, a lot of people aren't even going to put a Coinbase account together, and certainly not a Strike account, and they're not going to do the research. But that's going to be the case 20 years from now too. You know, there's just a lot, there's just too much life going on and keeping people busy. So to me, just the getting that at Bitcoin exposure is, it's not as good, but I mean, I bought a seed signer in El Salvador, and I spent an hour watching a YouTube video, and I'm like, this is pretty in depth. Like, this is tougher, you know, like making my own QR code by hand. Yes, I'm going to do it, but nobody else is going to do that. Like, that's not a reasonable thing for mass adoption. Putting together a bunch of like a Raspberry Pi Zero and a webcam, and I mean, this downloading, go to a website, down flashing over to a hard drive. Like, this is not what normal people do. So, but normal people buy ETFs, and they have brokers that do it for them. And so you can't exclude the masses if you want mass adoption. So I like, yeah, it's not awesome, but it's way better than nothing. So I'm on board.
Yeah. So I was reading more about Zimbabwe too, and they have pretty much come out and said that they are opening up to anybody that provides crypto transactions to customers. They want to hear from them on how to help with crypto regulation. So right now they're like 103rd out of all the countries in terms of crypto adoption. And in comparison, I think Nigeria is like number two, which is kind of crazy. But so they're trying to improve. They're asking for help. I mean, it's exciting that they are doing this from a government and they see the need. They already, I think, had signed that infrastructure ploy to be able to utilize a lot of their resources to help build out infrastructure and Bitcoin mining and things like that. So it's good. It's happening. It's going to probably be a little bit slower than anybody wants, but man, for a government to come out and do this, that's kudos for them.
Yeah. I mean, all that stuff takes forever, but step one is kind of getting that mentality right and getting enough people behind it. So yeah, that's definitely a good sign.
And then I'm sure you saw Bukele pretty much came out. I mean, he's been, 2 weeks into his second five-year term, and he's already planning on creating a Bitcoin bank in El Salvador. So that's exciting to see. We'll see how long that really takes and what the interest is in that, but that would be awesome.
Yeah, I need to kind of figure out what that means since, you know, do I need a bank if I can hold digital cash in a hardware wallet? Like, you know, does it make it easier for people to hold, you know, that's valuable. So I'm kind of curious to see what that entails. But again, man, you got to have somebody, you got to have the crazy guy at the country club that's into Bitcoin, and in order for the other guys to get in 5 years later and when the ETF's available. And so you got to have this guy in El Salvador blazing the trail on stuff like this. And then 5 years from now, maybe there's a handful of Bitcoin banks, or maybe it doesn't work. And maybe, they back out of it. But like, you got to play with this stuff. I mean, it's literally just innovation. Can we bank with Bitcoin? It's like, I don't know. Let's figure it out.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think it'll have dollars and Bitcoin. From what I understand, it's almost like getting banking services if you have Bitcoin. So you could put Bitcoin in there and be able to take a loan against it and do all that. And I mean, right now, I mean, look what happened with SAB 121, and any crypto assets are considered liabilities of banks, right? Not actual assets. So this is kind of flipping the script on that, and that would be great. I mean, even Brazil just announced, the Brazil's largest bank, whatever they're called, Inu or something like that, they just announced that they're giving access to all of their customers to buy and trade Bitcoin and Ethereum, right? So, I mean, you're starting to see the rest of the world wake up and get access to this, and for a bank to be able to say we can do this, that's exciting as well.
Yeah, and you know, I'm old enough to remember like savings accounts. You'd have it, when you went to the bank, you'd open up a checking account and a savings account. Your checking account would get you like nothing on interest, but the savings account would get you at least a whole percentage point, like something. And then as far as I know, those are dead because they don't pay anything. But if you could have a bank where your checking account was in dollars and your savings account was in Bitcoin and the bank did the transaction for you, that would be a nice way to just like, hey, you know what? I don't need to spend this money for 2, 3, 4 years. I'm going to just deposit in Bitcoin and let it appreciate. Like that would be a valuable bank service to provide.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. MicroStrategy was also in the news. I'm sure you probably saw that. They're planning to raise another $700 million to buy Bitcoin. I think they currently have, what, 700 million. Yeah, so they have over $14 billion in Bitcoin already. So that's just kind of crazy. They're over 1% of all the Bitcoin out there. They don't have enough. Peter Schiff thinks that all the hedge funds are selling the ETFs and shorting MicroStrategy, and it's going to cause to crash, which will be funny if that really happens. I don't think it will, but I think it's more so that miners are selling, and that's why you've seen Bitcoin drop a little bit here lately, not hedge funds trying to short MicroStrategy.
Yeah, I mean, Bitcoin drop here recently, like we've been bouncing mainly in the $60,000 range for months. Like if we drop from 70 to 64, it's not really a drop to me. You know, that's just like, we're just ranging around. Like you're just trading Bitcoin from short-term traders that are trying to make, you know, day trades and short-term swing trades. And a fraction of those are getting bought by dollar cost averaging Bitcoin people that are putting them in long-term storage. And so the longer we kind of keep in this little range that Peter Schiff thinks is bad for Bitcoin, the more Bitcoin comes off exchanges, the more the float gets removed from the market. And then when we do get some price escalation, the less Bitcoin's available for purchase on exchanges. And so the price is going to shoot up faster. Like Peter Schiff giving people Bitcoin advice, if you're taking it, then you get a problem. If you want to listen to him about gold, go for it. He knows a lot about gold. Like when he doesn't talk about Bitcoin, he's pretty much got it nailed. And then when he starts talking about Bitcoin, he's terrible. And it's just very normal Bitcoin behavior. I don't feel like we're headed for a massive fall. Now, if the entire economy and we have a global recession and all that stuff happens, yeah, guess what? Like Bitcoin's not going to shoot up if everybody's selling everything to hoard cash. But yeah, like Peter Schiff's not the guy to get Bitcoin advice from.
Yeah, it's interesting. The mini MicroStrategy, and mini is probably saying it really nicely, Metaplanet over in Japan that is trying to follow in MicroStrategy's shadow, they just bought another 23 Bitcoin. So there's like 141 Bitcoin in their company, and their stock price has jumped like 456% year to date, right? It, compared to MicroStrategy, it's been 120 something percent. I mean, it's just crazy, right? I mean, these companies keep saying, oh yeah, we're going to just put Bitcoin on our asset sheet, and it's making things look really good for them long term.
Well, you know what's weird to me? Like a lot of these CEOs of public companies have performance-based compensation packages that are tied to stock price. Mm-hmm. And so if you're a CEO and if you're not even really into Bitcoin, you could really help your stock price by putting some Bitcoin on the balance sheet and riding this thing up and hitting your compensation targets and getting paid. So I'm still surprised that we haven't seen more companies jump into Bitcoin, putting Bitcoin on the corporate balance sheet. So it's coming. I'm surprised it hasn't gotten here yet. But, you know, a lot of these guys have to wait until, not it's too late, but until the price starts running and, you know, they somehow now doesn't feel like a good time to buy Bitcoin. But when it's at 75,000 or 85,000, it will seem like a good time to buy Bitcoin to those guys. So, you know, that's fine with me. It'll continue to drive price up once we're in that price discovery. But it's in the CEO's best interest right now to add Bitcoin to corporate balance sheets.
There's a couple of pretty large corporations that are getting involved in Bitcoin in a big way. One of the Chinese telecoms, and I think one of the larger Chinese telecoms, Coolpad, just said they're going to allocate another $13.5 million to buy Bitcoin miners. They're going to deploy them in North America since China isn't too excited about that. Oh, and that's going to, I think, almost double their capacity that they have right now, right? So, I mean, you got a Chinese telecom doing that, and then Dutch Telecom, German Telecom is in the process of about to start mining Bitcoin. So they've already been running Bitcoin and Lightning nodes and even Ethereum, right? And now they're going to start mining Bitcoin as well. And this is the same company that owns, I think, T-Mobile. That's some big names right there that are getting involved in Bitcoin mining. And that's exciting.
It is. And still nobody's really talking about Bitcoin outside of Bitcoin folks. So like, I feel like all of this is just building a stronger, broader foundation. You know, T-Mobile corporate high level T-Mobile has visibility into this. Right. And so T doesn't have much of a choice. You know, you either watch your competitors succeed or fail here. Do you watch them? Do you just sit on the sidelines knowing that what's going on with MicroStrategy and everything else, or do you get a little play yourself? So it's not, the game theory is real on Bitcoin.
T was trying to buy T-Mobile not too long ago, right? It might flip the script here in the future. So let's talk about Ethereum a little bit. There was some interesting news happening there. So ProShares, which is one of the larger ETF issuers out there and does not have any involvement in the Bitcoin ETFs, has recently come out and kind of jumped into the Ethereum ETF game. What's crazy is they submitted their 19B-4 application on June 7th, which is a Friday. By Monday, it was approved by the SEC. On Tuesday, they submitted their S-1. So, like, it is happening super fast. I mean, I think they have like $70 billion in assets. So it'll be interesting to see what happens and if they become a big player or if they can become a big player. I mean, I guess we're still looking at, I think it's September now for the ETFs for Ethereum to officially come out. But it's exciting to see that other companies like ProShares say, oh, we want to get involved in this, and maybe Ethereum is the way to do it.
Yeah, I am eagerly watching what happens on this Ethereum ETF stuff. Like, Ethereum, from a market cap standpoint, so much more than Bitcoin. You could see like a much bigger move once the money comes in. Even if they only get 10-15% of what Bitcoin got, that it could be a pretty, it could put Ethereum like on the map in a big way. And with these network effects and everything, is there room for a third and a fourth and a fifth crypto ETF? You know, are people just going to get burned out and kind of call it? So, you know, in this Ethereum versus Solana thing, if you start pumping Ethereum that way, that could be a big market mover in Ethereum's favor.
Yeah. And everybody expects a Solana ETF to happen shortly after the Ethereum. I don't know if it's going to be shortly, but it'll be interesting.
It needs to be shortly, because if they get a big lead, it's tough to come back.
Yeah. So another thing that was interesting, we talked about CDBCs, and before I address that, Tether just announced that they have a new stable coin that they are kind of bringing out, and it's a synthetic dollar that is backed by gold. So, I mean, back in 71, we used to have dollars that were backed by gold. Now we're going to kind of go back to that. But they have, I think it's XAUT is their gold-backed token. And you can take that and mint this stablecoin that is backed by that XAUT. And you can mint up to like 75% of the value of your XAUT. So it's kind of a collateralized version of a gold stablecoin. So we'll see what happens with that. But I mean, I guess it's funny that we're going back to a gold-based dollar.
Look what we invented. Look at you can trust this dollar. It's backed by gold. Nobody's ever thought of this.
Yeah. And then what was interesting, so the BIS, which is the Bank for International Settlements, mm-hmm. which is kind of the umbrella organization for all the world's central banks, they released a report talking about their, I guess, toll to all the different banks out there, the central banks, what they're doing. 94% of those banks are expecting to do a wholesale CDBC in the next 6 years. And so this isn't retail. This is for all their, I guess, closing things internally and transferring money internally to from bank to bank. But I think the retail would follow shortly thereafter. But I mean, you're talking about 94% is almost 100, right? I mean,
that's a lot.
And it's up from 91% when they last checked it. So it's still, there's a lot of countries that are going to do some version of CDBC. And there's, of course, a lot of pushback on the retail side because they don't want to be tracked. But like we talked about, blockchain in general makes this so much easier and faster to settle than anything they're doing today.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't trust them to even be able to execute a CBDC that doesn't fail. It doesn't have downtime. That doesn't, you know, there's just have a double spend problem. You know, like I just don't, like the best programmers in the world aren't going to work for a central banker. You know, like so I feel like, you know, it's innovation. It's a use case. They're going to do it. I don't expect it to go really well, but at least when they screw up, they'll screw up with their own central bank money and not with retail money for normal people.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if they try to do their own version of it or if they just leverage somebody else's platform, right? I mean, Ripple's been pushing that they want to be the stablecoin platform for all these governments to use. Will they do that or will they just do what Binance did and cut and paste the Ethereum code and try to do their own version of it, right?
True. So
we talked about Nigeria earlier, but there is some more news with that, with Binance and the executive that they've been holding for over 110 days at this point, right? He's had malaria for a month. He's a U.S. citizen. Kind of crazy. Well, good news is they dropped some of the charges. So I think the tax evasion charges were dropped, which is good. They still have the money laundering charges that are still existing. So they're still holding him. I think there's another hearing in like a day or two. So they're hoping that those will get dropped. And when I mean dropped, it is just dropped against the executives. It's still against Binance, but they just keep saying this guy has no power to make any decisions. So there's no reason to hold him and let him go and just go against Binance, right? So we're headed down the right path, I think, with hopefully getting him out of Nigeria, but there's still some work to do there.
Yeah, I think last week when we talked about kind of the U.S. government getting involved because he's a U.S. citizen, like, all right, this thing just will get resolved a lot quicker than I thought it would. So that's probably part of it.
Yeah. We haven't really heard that the U.S. government has gotten involved, right? But at least it sounds like things are moving, right?
Exactly. Like once there's rumors of it, the guys in Nigeria, like somebody's talking to the judge. Like, yeah. I live in a small town. I know how this stuff works. It just works on a bigger scale for those guys.
So Polkadot was also in the news. They just announced a $65 million funding for what they're calling Jam, which is a join accumulate machine. It is, the way it was described was that it's kind of an evolutionary minimalist blockchain protocol designed to exchange data management and interoperability within the network. So Polkadot has been one of those things that Gavin Wood is an ex-Ethereum founder, and he's working on creating Polkadot as that next complete interoperability. This is one of those just pieces that it sounds awesome of what they're going to do and what it's going to be able to do. I think it'll help a lot with L2 integrations as well in the future. They don't even have a date of when this is going to be set, but I mean, you have a lot of other chains that are starting to use more of the Polkadot infrastructure to connect everything together. So moving forward, that's good. I mean, Polkadot hasn't really got a lot of attention here lately, and I think there's still a ton of potential for that product to do well in the future too.
Yeah, I think I still hold some Polkadot from the 2021 stuff. So I haven't heard much about it in a long time. So maybe check and make sure I still have it.
Another thing that I saw that isn't truly crypto related, but it is to me kind of important. So Proton is a company that had initially done Proton Mail, which is about kind of a security email service. And now they've expanded to VPNs and encrypted cloud storage and all the stuff that I think Google Cloud does. They are transitioning from a for-profit company to a nonprofit, and they're based in Switzerland, so they're kind of one of the best ones out there from a privacy perspective. They still had to give up some of their data, less than a year ago when someone came after them, but considering that it is a crowdsourced company, right? It started many years ago via crowdfunding, and compared to the VC ones and the big tech companies that are out there competing with it, it's still probably one of the more enticing ones to look at. And I think it's important that anytime you're dealing with crypto, protecting yourself as much as possible is important. So using VPNs is a big deal. Not having Google check into every one of your emails is kind of a big deal too. So it's helpful to use stuff like this.
Yeah, no, I need to better use VPNs myself.
And then last thing I had was ZK Sync. They had their airdrop. For most of us, especially if you're in the U.S., you have no access to it thanks to the SEC and their amazing belief that everybody is trying to screw you instead of, by giving you free money. They plan to airdrop 17.5% of their supply. In the first 2 hours of their announcing it, 45% of that airdrop had been gobbled up. So people jumped all over it. It had about a $800 million market cap or a little bit more than that, which gave it a $4.7 billion fully diluted value. In comparison to some of the other companies that have done that, like Starknet, Starknet's fully diluted value when they came out was like $30 billion. So, I mean, you're talking about a 6x difference. So it'll be, a lot of people are saying that right now they think ZK Sync is a little undervalued. So we'll see what happens from there.
Yeah, as much as I would like to kind of dive in and try to figure some of that stuff out, I'm just not going to. Like, I just don't think the U.S. is going to allow that stuff, and it would be a lot of work for me to deal with it. So I just sit back and make sure my Bitcoin's still in my hardware wallets.
To me, I think the whole zero knowledge concept is going to take off a lot in the future because it's going to enable much faster transactions. And once we start onboarding the next billion users, you're going to want things to happen faster and cheaper, right? So, and the other big thing that this does is help with the privacy perspective too, right? So I'm optimistic that it'll do well, but it's still years away before it becomes a true reality at the same time.
Cool.
What else did I miss?
Man, I think we nailed it. All my notes are checked off. So it was one of those weeks where you got everything.
Awesome. Well, as always, great chatting with you. We'll talk again next week and see what's happening at that point.
Sounds good, man.
If all of these crypto conversations leave you with more questions and you're looking for answers, I've created a product that dives into most of those answers, including why crypto, how to set up a cold wallet, and some of the more advanced strategies for dealing with crypto. Check the link in the notes below and hope to see you there.